Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. I want to take a moment to thank FreshBooks for sponsoring Hack the Entrepreneur. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners like you get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. From accepting credit cards to get paid online, to tracking expenses via their iPhone and Android apps, FreshBooks allows you to get organized and stay organized throughout the year, so as you approach year end, like we are right now, you won't feel so stressed by it. Try FreshBooks for free today. Go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/hack.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a blogger, podcaster, lifestyle business builder, and has been an entrepreneur for over a decade. He is currently co-founder and CEO of Fizzle, a course and community where him and his team help indie entrepreneurs build lifestyle businesses. 10 years ago, my guest was a corporate management consultant for Fortune 500 companies, but he was dissatisfied with the path he was on, so he decided to change directions. Over the next 5 years or so, he built several digital businesses, including Start a Blog That Matters and Think Traffic, the latter which has been recently rebranded as The Sparkline. Now, let's hack. Corbett Barr. I'd like to take a moment to tell you about today's sponsor, Servata, a rapidly growing startup that has reinvented how you get consumer research for every decision. Testing creative, measuring demand for new products, tracking consumer trends, and more. Picture this. Imagine debating with a colleague about which logo to pick for a new product or discussing a consumer trend. They'll go by gut feel, while you will use Servata to ask hundreds of highly targeted consumers overnight to give you hard data for your decision. Servata's secret is brand new tech that collects respondents via the scale of the web, as opposed to slow and old-fashioned panels. The best part for Hack the Entrepreneur listeners? Name your own discount. Servata will match the respondents you purchase at no cost with no limit. Need to reach 200 millennial females in Florida? You'll get 400 for the same price. 2,000 baby boomers in the Midwest, you'll get 4,000. All of you have a decision this week that requires reliable data, so why wait? To redeem this free offer, visit servata.com/hack. That's servata.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have somebody I've wanted to talk to for, I think it's going to be over a year now. I've wanted you to have them on the show, but Corbett, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, excellent. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let's jump straight into it.
All right.
Corbett, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Honestly, I think it's really just about persistence. I remember when I started thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, I just thought about how important persistence is, knowing that we all come to the table with different skills. And more importantly, we all come to the table with things that we lack. And I think it's just through hard work and being determined that we fill those gaps or find other people that we can bring into the fold who fill those gaps for us so that we can make progress. Everybody's path is different. Some people take years or decades to make a breakthrough. Others are lucky in the beginning. But I think if each of us is persistent enough, we will find success eventually.
Very well said. So this idea of when you started thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, because that's totally different than the way it sort of happened for me, where now looking back, it all makes sense. But when I was going through life forward, it was like, it was all kind of ramshackle. None of it kind of worked. And I was like, what am I doing sort of thing? Then I look back and like, well, wow, I'm an entrepreneur. So how did this sort of work out for you? Like, what was happening sort of in your life where you were like, I'm going to become an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I was always interested in business and technology. And so I ended up sort of climbing my way up the corporate ladder as fast as I could at a fairly young age. And in my mid-20s, I found myself as a Fortune 500 consultant, a management consultant. So I had to travel around the country and work for some really big companies, helping them solve large technology problems. But as I got further and further up that ladder, I just kept having this nagging feeling like I was never really going to be satisfied unless I saw if I had what it takes to become an entrepreneur. And I don't know where that came from exactly, but for some reason, there was just always this feeling to me that being an entrepreneur was the ultimate. I don't know if it was just being your own boss or seeing if you could build something from the ground up or what exactly it was, but I just had an itch that I needed to scratch. And my wife and I moved to San Francisco in the mid-2000s for her to go to grad school as a fine artist. And I was just reconnecting with old colleagues and people that I knew there. And one in particular was right in the middle of building a new idea for a startup. And we kept talking more and more. And eventually I convinced myself that now was the time. Now is the time to scratch that itch. And so we did the quote unquote traditional San Francisco Silicon Valley style startup where we built a software prototype and shopped it around to venture capitalists and raised a bunch of money and went through the boom and then eventually the bust cycle.
Wow. I did not know this. That's really cool. But, and also it's, I mean, it is that traditional, it's funny to call it traditional because it's happened for since the late 90s, maybe.
Right.
Traditional in an internet sense.
Yep.
But so you did that and then you, the whole cycle went through, but what stopped you from doing that next time? Like from doing that again, that whole create a pro, like don't take it something to market, get customers that pay you, actually just like create an idea of something and a prototype maybe and get funding.
Yeah. So our approach was what a lot of big companies do, which is you just try to build a free service as big as possible. And then you burn through a bunch of funding rounds. And then eventually you figure out a way to monetize it, sort of like Twitter, right? Or Facebook. And what we found was in the financial collapse that happened in 2008, we were caught in a really bad position. We didn't have revenue to keep the company together. We had to go hat in hand to our investors, and they were freaking out about the financial world collapsing. So long story short, it was a rough time for me for a lot of reasons. I felt trapped in this role, despite being my own boss and thinking that that was the ultimate. It turned out that there are different ways that you can build a company. I didn't really know that. I just jumped in and ended up being one of those entrepreneurs that works 70 hours a week and basically put all of my self-worth into the success of this startup. And when things started not going well, it was a pretty bleak time for me. And I had to really take a step back. And instead of just doing another startup like that right away, I just knew I wasn't in the right frame of mind to do that. And I needed to ask myself some questions about who I really was and what I wanted from life and my career. And so that's when my wife and I took a sabbatical and we actually took a long road trip. It ended up being about 8 months to Mexico. And we just drove around Mexico. We wanted to get to know the country and really just wanted to hit the reset button in a major way so that I had time to think about what I wanted to do next with my career.
Favorite place in Mexico now?
Favorite place now is this stretch on the Pacific coast called the Costa Alegre, which is between Puerto Vallarta and Manzanillo.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
There are a bunch of little towns there. It's just a sleepy little string of beach towns.
So would it be surfing and stuff?
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. Okay, cool. Sorry, I was like looking up to the corner. You can't see me, but I was trying to visualize where that was on the map. And that's cool. That's really cool. Mexico's a great spot. So I would assume during maybe not, probably before the road trip, after the startup sort of went down, maybe at that point, but I'm wondering if any time then or since then, have you ever just woke up in the morning and been like, I really wish I just like could go to work and just that none of it rested on my shoulders and I just didn't have to deal with everything? Like, does this ever happen to you anymore?
No, not really. There are some times when I wish I could do a skill over and over again, like writing software or something. I actually really enjoy writing software and I like that part of when I get to do it, but I do it very infrequently these days. Or, you know, just writing or something like that. And the reality is like we have to wear so many hats in a small business. So sometimes I wish I could specialize a little bit more, but I really don't miss going to a workplace other than maybe a little bit of the camaraderie you get with working with a bunch of people. But we're kind of working on that now ourselves. So
yeah, was Was this something that you learned early enough, you think, in your sort of entrepreneurial career? The idea that like you want to learn how to code or you like to code, but it's maybe not the best thing, or you want to maybe write or you want to do these things, but they're not necessarily the best thing for you as the founder or CEO to be doing.
Yeah, I do still get to write a decent amount, and I also do write some software. I think, you know, for some reason I learned how to do both of those things, but I was just always called, I felt called for some reason to manage things and to build something from scratch. And the reality of that is just that, you know, you have to do a whole lot of things and you really don't get to specialize. I do have some friends who are sort of sole founders, and they seem to spend a little bit more time focused on just a couple of things like writing or podcasting or something. But I know behind the scenes that they're doing a whole lot of stuff as well. So, you know, I think there's that idea sometimes of the kind of entrepreneurship that we do, or that you know, tend to interview people about, where somebody's going to be like a lone wolf, just a single founder and a person who operates a company by themselves. And I kind of started that way, but then I found I just wanted to be able to take a vacation, right? And not have to worry about everything. So I hired one person, and eventually that kind of snowballed. And now we have a team of four.
Yeah. And that's what I love. And you're right. Like lots of people I interview, and the listeners, we're lots of just like that solo entrepreneur style, right? But it's getting over this mindset of it's not the best thing for me to be doing right now. I should actually be able to get rid of that and give it to somebody else so that I can sort of focus on either big picture or like scaling the business beyond myself so I can take a vacation.
Yeah. And it's scary to give up some control of what you're doing. And it's also really hard to find great people. And I think when people have bad experiences with hiring somebody, a lot of times it's just that the hire wasn't a very good fit. And that's a skill set as a founder that you have to get really good at, which is being able to attract and identify and develop really great people.
Yeah, I fully agree. So while we're talking about delegating, all the experts now talk 80-20 rule, right? Do 20% get 80% of the results? At the beginning of this conversation, you said persistence is your one thing. So could you now tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Absolutely not good at in my business. I identified a while back that the creative side, the design side, I knew that I wanted my products and my site and the things that we created to look a certain way, but I wasn't necessarily capable of doing that myself.
Is that the Chase side of the?
That's the Chase side of the house. Chase Reeves, my business partner, we connected and started working together about 3.5 years ago. And I just saw in him right away that he was able to do things that I wasn't, and vice versa. And so I think that's what's made the partnership so strong, is that we just complement each other really well.
And when you started, you had two partners. There was three founders, right, of Fizzle?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
We started—
Because you had Caleb.
Yeah, Caleb Wojcik.
Right.
And Caleb and Chase and I started Fizzle, and eventually Caleb just had his own itch to scratch. He really loves video production, and he also wanted to build his own business. And you know, that's one of the things that we'll probably have to contend with as a business, is that we hire people, and at the same time, we talk so much about entrepreneurship and build it up, because it is this really great thing. And so we're going to have to expect that many of the people that we work with will want to eventually go on and do their own thing. And we support that. We just hope that we can, you know, get them to stick around long enough to make a material contribution to the business.
And that's got to be a tough thing, because you're teaching entrepreneurship and from creativity, like the creative side. And then it's said over and over and over again, you should do your own thing. Eventually you need to do your own thing.
Yeah. I used to worry about that until I looked at the average tenure at big companies that you think of, especially the tech companies in Silicon Valley, like Apple and Facebook and others. And it's much shorter than you would think. I forget exactly what it was, but I think it was under 3 years. It might've been under 2 years in some cases. And so far we have a higher average than that. So I'm really not that worried about it. People who work with us just really believe in entrepreneurship as a cause and its ability to transform lives and even society in some ways. I just really believe that communities are better off when more people are business owners instead of just working for some giant faceless corporation that they don't really care about, and a corporation that doesn't really care about the community either. And that's something I've partly learned from being in places like Mexico, where there are more business owners, just because the society is based on mostly, you know, restaurants and services and things like that. And you just get to know a lot of small business owners. And it's not always perfect, but there's this deep sense of satisfaction and self-sufficiency that you get from running your own business that you can't get anywhere else. And the people that work on our team are really interested in helping others achieve that. And then at the same time, we're such a small business. We're just four people. We all kind of have that sense and we treat each other really like partners.
Yeah, I love it. So you partnered with Chase because he used the artistic side. What was Caleb? What was this trio? This, like, was it you that came up with the idea? And because I know, like, my listeners, a big thing is obviously finding co-founders and like partnering on big ideas.
Yep.
Because they're too big for one person. I would love to know your thought process of how you did that.
Yeah. So Caleb and I had been working together. He started as like an intern for me and then grew into much more. And he was really interested in video production and just content production in general, podcasting and video and writing and so on. And he and I were building a lot of different things, including Think Traffic and a site called Expert Enough and a product called Start a Blog That Matters, along with another one called Traffic School. And we were just talking about how complicated it can be when you build a lot of different blogs and sites and products for sale. And wouldn't it be interesting if we consolidated everything under one roof and created this over-delivery of resources for people at a really reasonable price? The other thing we were annoyed by were all of these really expensive courses out there that purport to teach people about entrepreneurship, but they're like a month or 2 months long, and they couldn't possibly teach everybody what they need to know in that period of time, and yet they cost $1,000 or $2,000 or something. So that's kind of how the idea for Fizzle came about between myself and conversations with Caleb. And Chase had just recently helped us redesign Think Traffic, and it was clear that his touch would be a really great addition to Fizzle. So as we were bouncing the idea around, that's when we approached Chase about partnering on it.
And then the idea, so like with projects sort of, you mentioned Think Traffic, Start a Blog That Matters, and a couple others in there that I didn't get all. Oh, Traffic School.
Yep.
So you went from this huge like body of many different projects to one, and you brought everything into Fizzle, right? Even Sparkline, the blog, is Think Traffic, is it not?
Yeah, pretty much. We basically, you know, put Think Traffic on hold and moved most of the most compelling articles over to the blog at Fizzle. We also rolled our existing products like Start a Blog That Matters into Fizzle. So previously we'd been selling Start a Blog That Matters, for example, for, I believe, $97. And instead, it now is part of Fizzle membership, which costs $35 a month. And you get access to Start a Blog That Matters. But also we have, I believe, now around 500 videos in our training library. And we paired that up with coaching and community and all kinds of stuff.
Wow. That's so many videos.
It's a lot of videos. It's surprising sometimes when you look back.
Yeah. Does that get harder? Is there a concern with like overwhelm for new members coming in and being like, oh my goodness, like this is so much?
Yeah. And that's something that we spent this year addressing. We had heard from people that there are, you know, more and more courses in there, but that doesn't necessarily help people make progress. It gives them more options when they're trying to tackle certain things, but it doesn't necessarily help them with the big picture of, you know, what is building a business like and what do I need to do next, basically. So that's when we took a step back and instead of just looking at this huge curriculum map that we wanted to build out, we started thinking, what would be like a backbone for this thing? How could we organize the content and really organize the journey that entrepreneurs go through in a common way to help people identify exactly where they are and specifically what they need to be working on next? At first, we didn't think that was possible. It seemed like the journey is just so different for everyone. But as we started reviewing our own stories and customers that we've worked with one-on-one and members within Fizzle, there were commonalities. There were things that every entrepreneur goes through. And so we just started iterating on this idea of a small business roadmap. And that's been a long process now. I think we first started talking about it back in January or February of this year. And we launched it finally in September after many iterations. And we continue to tweak and improve it. And I'm sure that we'll do that for many years in the future.
Nice. So within Fizzle now, it doesn't seem like you're looking like if something came through your inbox this weekend, that was really interesting to you. It doesn't seem like you would take a whole new project and run with it in a different direction than Fizzle. Seems like your sole focus?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've built some real stability in Fizzle, and it's not growing like a rocket ship, but it's growing very consistently year over year. And I'm happy with that. And there are things that we could do, but in terms of new projects, basically any new project is going to be related to Fizzle somehow. It's not to say that we might not change things somewhat dramatically, but it would just be related to Fizzle at this point.
And this idea of sitting down and sort of going through the process, because you have 500 videos, you got to organize. So it sounds like you sit down, you discuss like your journeys, like kind of map it all out. Is this typically like the process that you guys would go through to come up with, say, something like a new module or something you want to train in, or a new project within Fizzle? Like, is it a very democratic amongst the four of you at this point? Or is it like Corbett saying, no, I think we should do this?
No, I mean, we all have to convince each other. We have what we call a company operating system. And this is a living, breathing system that we use. And it changes from time to time. But this defines how we work together, how we get work done on a daily and weekly, monthly, and then on a periodic basis, how we plan projects, how we coordinate, and so on. And once a quarter, basically, we all sit down and we talk about themes, things that we would like to improve about Fizzle, ways that we could help our members become more successful. And we usually come up with one theme for a quarter. Right now, we're working on what we call growth, which is really just focused on getting more members in the door. Other times, we might be focused on, like with the roadmap, specific curriculum improvements. And from there, we just break it down into projects, and we assign the projects a weighting based on how interested we are, what the impact we think could be, how much effort is involved. We rank all of those, and then that kind of becomes our democratic process, basically. And then we decide who's best to work on each project.
And what for growth, since that's your theme right now, could you tell us what the number one way you think growth is going to come to Fizzle?
Well, so the way we look at growth is it's really a process of identifying a bunch of different channels, ways that you think you can get new people in the door, and then experimenting with each of those. And some of those channels are things that we've done in the past. Some of them are brand new, and we're trying a lot. So one big channel for us is our own podcast. Probably 40% or so of people come through our podcast. Another big channel is the blog and all the articles that we've written. I think we have like maybe 500 or 600 articles up at the Sparkline. Those are the bread and butter, but we're looking at ways to expand that. And one thing that we found to be popular is being guests on other podcasts. That seems to drive a decent number of members. We're also experimenting with Facebook ads. We're experimenting with sponsorships and member referrals and all kinds of things. And really, the question is, at the end of this, then we'll look at all of those and say, which ones have the best effort to reward ratio, and then we'll pick a couple of them and continue.
Wow. So like, it seems so calculated and even like iterative in its like, you don't take just like grand leaps at things. I really admire that.
I think, and that's not to say that we haven't in the past. I think we've just gotten more and more organized. The business now is about 3 years old, and we've just had time to examine how we operate best and what leads to results. And we don't want to take all the fun out of it. We still, sometimes somebody gets a crazy idea that they're really excited about, and we might drop everything to pursue that idea for a while if it's convincing enough. But we also try to balance that with being calculated about how we take on projects.
And so when somebody gets really excited, say you get really excited about an idea on Monday and you convince everybody by Friday that you guys should go all into it because it's going to cause growth to go 5 times what it's been. How do you determine, and you guys kind of put all your time, energy, resources into it, and after 2 months or 3 months, it's like, this isn't working. Or even a month. I don't know, depending on the project, obviously. It's hypothetical. But how long would you guys push through something, do you think? Like what kind of feedback do you need, I guess, from the marketplace or from your partners to tell you that, no, Corbett, this actually is not going to work?
Well, we try to take our own advice in this case, which is we tell people to really break down big ideas into smaller and smaller parts that they can work on for a while and then get feedback as quickly as possible. Because the biggest risk is that you're going to spend months and months and months working on something only to release it and find out that nobody wants it. And that happens on the business scale as well as on the project scale within a business. So, you know, we know that Fizzle's going great, but we have to be vigilant about what we work on and where we spend our time. So if someone proposes a project that's going to take a long time, like, for example, as I said, the roadmap started in January or February, and we didn't launch it to the public until September. So we're talking about a 9-month-long project. In that case, we really broke it down and had multiple points where we were sharing it with people before it was done and getting feedback. We did a whole podcast series on the roadmap. We coached people one-on-one using the roadmap. We started doing onboarding sessions with people before we even had it implemented to show them what the roadmap was and to find out if it was helpful or not. So all the while, we're looking for evidence that it's working. We have like checkpoints as quickly as possible. And that kind of follows this whole idea of a minimum viable product, which is in the lean startup world, this idea that instead of having some grand vision, you should be working on getting the smallest thing out in public that you can use to get feedback on so that you limit the risk of creating something nobody wants. And so we really follow that on a project basis as well.
I love it. I love it. And I love that you started it by, well, we follow our own advice, which is also really, really good.
It's important.
It is. It is. And Fizzle, from what I've seen from the inside of it, is definitely something that everybody should check out. So Corbett, this has been a lot of fun, but I want to wrap up with one final question for you.
Yeah.
So this idea I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, right, we're always looking forward and sort of projecting our success into the future. In 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 5 years, when you get to do this, or when Fizzle gets to this many members, that's when you'll be successful. And of course, right before you get there, you set bigger, loftier goals further into the future. And we end up sometimes living in this gap where we are never successful. We're always pushing for it, which I agree we have to. But you've come a long ways since you were a management consultant, and you've had a really interesting and cool journey in entrepreneurship so far. So I would love if you would stop right now, turn around and look back at the whole journey, the ups, downs, the highs, the lows, and tell me how you feel about it up till today.
Oh, that's a great question. And I love the entrepreneurial gap concept in general. There's just something about human nature that causes us, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, to sort of live in that space, I think. And that's why it's so important to love what you do on a day-to-day basis. I recognize how lucky, how privileged I am to be in the position that I am, and that so many people have helped get here. And I also recognize that I've gotten to a point in life where I know that that gap exists and how important it is to enjoy the day-to-day. I mean, the whole point of working to create a better future is so that you can have a better life and enjoy yourself. And so the greatest shortcut is therefore to enjoy yourself right now. And I think that's a skill that I've been working on a lot recently. And if you can get yourself to that place where there's a balance between striving for more, we're kind of getting into some Zen stuff here, I think.
We are.
If there's a balance between striving for more, which is fun in itself, there's a lot of enjoyment that comes from that striving and having something that you're working towards. But you have to balance that out with either enjoying yourself day to day or really trying to savor the moments when you do reach the goals that you're looking for. And that's partly why, you know, we break things down into a quarterly process when we plan at Fizzle, because then at the end of the quarter, we get to stop and reflect, look back on what we did and just enjoy it and celebrate those wins that we had before we move on to the next project. I think too many people don't set those artificial boundaries, and it's just one project after the next, and you never really get to savor the moment.
So very, very well said. All right, Corbett, we've got to talk about your business in passing. There's a couple places you can probably send people to, and I would love if you would just tell the listeners specifically where to find out more about you.
Cool. So Fizzle, the entrepreneurship training library and community that we've been talking about, is available over at fizzle.co. And we have a free trial, actually. So you can get in and kick the tires and check things out without any commitment. And then if you decide to stick around, it's $35 a month. There's no hidden upcharges or anything like that. It's just basically everything we offer is available for that price, including community coaching, training, and we have meetups in a bunch of cities around the world, all kinds of fun stuff. So fizzle.co for that. And then also I run a weekly newsletter that I send with interesting links and resources and thoughts from me for people who are interested in building lifestyle businesses and just being independent entrepreneurs, as opposed to what we were talking about at the beginning, the traditional Silicon Valley-backed entrepreneurs. we're really talking about just independence. You can check that out over at lifestylebusinessweekly.com and sign up for that newsletter, and I'll just send you one email a week with links to things that might help you.
Excellent. So I cannot stand behind yet the Lifestyle Business Weekly because I just joined it right before this conversation, so I haven't got one, but I 100% fully endorse fizzle.co. Check it out. It's a free to try it out. So definitely just for the community alone in there, absolutely worth all the money.
Awesome.
Corbett, thank you so much for taking the time to join me finally today. I'm so glad we got to do this.
Yeah.
And just please keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Likewise. Thank you so much. And congrats on the success of the show. And I like that your show is different. You seem to really listen and you're a great interviewer. So thanks. It was fun.
Thanks. Corbett, thank you so very much. I've wanted to talk to you for a long time. I've admired what you've built at Think Traffic, Sparkline, and Fizzle. And I'm glad we got to have this conversation. I really, 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 truly enjoyed it. So thank you so much. And you're out there listening, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Corbett is obviously super, super nice, super genuine guy who's also a really, really smart entrepreneur, has built some really, really impressive businesses, and has a really unique and humble, I guess, way of sort of teaching entrepreneurship and his idea of independent entrepreneurship. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So I've got six points in the conversation that I had to go back and listen to, because there's these points that Corbett got to that I think really needed to be emphasized. But then as I went through the six of them, one of them stood out to me. There was that one thing that Corbett said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
We tell people to really break down big ideas into smaller and smaller parts that they can work on for a while and then get feedback as quickly as possible. Because the biggest risk is that you're going to spend months and months and months working on something only to release it and find out that nobody wants it. And that happens on the business scale as well as on the project scale within a business.
And that's the hack. Corbett. Yes, I love this. And you know why I love this? Because Brian Cohen, in the last episode, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it, because we go over the idea of breaking down big projects into tiny little pieces and the necessity of doing this. And then I kind of go through my process of how I do it kind of physically on my desk and then the software I use and bring it online and kind of clarify it. But that was sort of just the beginning. And that wasn't really what Corbett was saying. He was saying the idea of small things. And his idea wasn't so that it was easy to complete, which Brian and I discussed, and you should go back and listen to that again. But Corbett's idea is that you need to get validation and you need to know that your market and your audience will buy and will want and will pay you for what you are creating. You don't want to. He talks about the roadmap and how it was like an 8 or 9 month project, a project of huge scale. That's big. That's a really, really big project. But they didn't just like go into like their own little cocoon and just work on it and not let anybody see it through the whole process, because it's just, how would you possibly know? You wouldn't know, right? So they did a whole series on it on their podcast. They got great feedback so they could shape it. It helps shape kind of what you're building so that it's a better product market fit. And then they actually just like coached with actual fizzlers. And I don't know if that's what they call them, but I'm going to call them that, fizzlers. So people from in their community, and they worked them through this roadmap to ensure that not only was the product better because they got feedback and they threw their idea out there and got it tossed around, but also because people were genuinely interested in it. So this is just such a necessary step. You don't want to just like keep this stuff inside of you and just hope that it's the best thing ever. You have to let these things out. You have to let people see them. And incrementally, the smallest part of what you can possibly create, get it out there in somehow. Post it on your site. Post it on somebody else's. Do whatever you can. Let friends, let people in any Facebook community, anything you're part of, see it and sort of give you feedback and see if there's interest in this. This is so essential, because otherwise, there's nothing worse than like 8 months of just like, oh my God, I'm creating the greatest thing ever. You put it out there and it's like, wow, nobody actually cares about it in that sense or in that way. And then you're going to get feedback from people and then rebuild it, but it's going to take you more months. and you've already spent all this time and effort and sort of mental effort too, of pouring your heart and soul into something that only you really thought was the greatest thing. And so I love this idea of incrementally on a project and on a business sort of scale, letting these things out in increments, in small little pieces, to see how the market reacts, to see if people will pay you and if people will be interested in it. So essential. With this Corbett and with Brian's one from right before this, the episode before, that's how you take these ideas into market. This is how you do it. First, how to break it down and be able to actually complete it. But actually, to go back to that one with Brian, when you're laying it out into small, tiny little pieces so that it's easily for your brain to digest and for you to actually put onto a to-do list and get done, you could then take those sections and be like, okay, well, these first tiny little, 10 tiny little jobs that need to be done, that could actually be sort of packaged up and put out into the world in some way and got feedback on, and then move to the next 10 and the next 10 and the next 10. It's brilliant. That's how to do it. This is how to ensure that people are interested. And this is how to take your idea to market. And Corbett, thank you so much for that, because I appreciate the inside sort of look at how you guys deal with it on Fizzle. And I know that you out there will get a lot out of that. Whew. All right. Well, thank you so very much. I really, really, really enjoyed that conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. You know that I really do value you stopping, taking the time to hang out with me here. You have a lot of choices for a lot of podcasts out there. Fizzle is a great show that you should check out when you get a chance. And yeah, htebook.com, don't forget. The new Hack the Entrepreneur book, first book I ever wrote. I've let that out in small parts to different people to read it, tear apart, edit it, send me feedback back. So otherwise, I wouldn't be confident actually in launching it at this point or releasing it. But I feel really, really confident because it's been torn apart and dissected by so many different people within my audience and just with people who are really, really good editors. So yeah, I've used exactly what I just said and explained to you with Corbett. That's how it works. That's what I do. That's what Corbett does. So htebook.com, go there. Make sure to get on the email list and you will be the first to know when the book drops in a few weeks. And yeah, I think you're going to really, really enjoy it. I hope so, because I made it especially for you. All right. I think I've gone on long enough. Thank you very, very much. And as always, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.